When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Riverfront. This is episode number 523 of The Riverfront Reds Show. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. This is the show, of course, where we discuss the Cincinnati Reds and occasionally Calvin Pickering. Again, I'm your host, Chad Dotson. With me this week, the podfather, Bill Lack. How are you, Bill?
Doing great. Doing great. Spring is coming. Spring training has started.
It is upon us, and it's an exciting time of year. Certainly as an exciting a spring training as we've had in Cincinnati in many, many years, I would think, coming off last year's excitement. We'll get into pitchers and catchers and all that, but before we go any further, I'd ask, please head over to YouTube or your favorite podcast app. Give us a subscribe, give us a like, give us a follow, whatever that requires. And, you know, we always say this show, and we mean it, the show wouldn't be possible without the support of our Patreon family. So patreon.com/riverfront, sincere, click the link in the show notes. Some sad news this week, Bill, and I want to get your thoughts on this because Don Gullett, legendary Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame pitcher on 3 World Series teams, 2 in Cincinnati. Three with the Reds.
Two with the Reds. Well, 3 World Series teams, won 4 World Championships in a row.
Ah, that's right. That's right. So Don Gullett, and of course, Don Gullett was a hero of the Big Red Machine, certainly an exciting young player and whose career didn't quite turn out like many have predicted. But I know him mostly as the guy who in the mid-90s was the Reds pitching coach and had a run there for a while where it looked like he was creating some magic with pitchers. I don't know how much that was him or what, but that's how I mostly got to know him as the pitching coach, plus this sort of kind of legendary figure as a kid just starting out in the big leagues. What are your thoughts about Don Gullett, his legacy in Cincinnati, and what might have been, I think?
The first thing that grabbed my attention was Johnny Bench put a tweet out today or yesterday and said that Gullett was the best athlete and competitor that he ever saw. That's pretty high. That's a pretty high standard there. If Johnny Bench is calling you the best athlete he ever played with or ever saw. He was a fairly local kid. He was from, you know, Northeast Ohio. Kentucky, Lynn, Kentucky. Big three-sport athlete. At one point, he scored 50 points in a high school basketball game. Threw a perfect game in baseball where he struck out 20 out of 21. I imagine that other guy had a heck of a bragging rights, a guy that he actually got to hit the ball off of.
Right.
You know, there's the famous story that they always tell about Gullett where he scored 72 points in a high school football game. And I read another story later today about Bench saying in that game that Gullett scored 11 touchdowns and kicked 6 extra points. He said, so they gave him crap about the 5 extra points he missed.
I love it.
His senior year, he was all state in 3 sports, which I've never heard of anybody doing. Drafted 14th overall in the first round in the 69 draft by the Reds, played in Sioux Falls, and the next year he made the big club. From rookie ball to the big club.
How old was he? His rookie year?
He was 19 when he
debuted
with the Reds on the 1970 team. And he was in 44 games that year, 42 in relief, went 5-2 with a 2.43 ERA. Started one of the World Series, in the World Series, he threw 6 2/3 of innings and gave up 1 earned run against the Orioles, and they had a pretty good lineup, the Robinsons, Boot Powell, you know, 72 was the only year in his career he had a losing record, and but that was the year he had hepatitis and he was you know off his game the whole year. 75, he went 15-4 for the Reds with a 2.42 ERA, and He only started 22 games. I mean, it's 75 and 76, but both times he had numbers that looked like they were heading him towards maybe a Cy Young, and he had injury problems. One of them, and I can't remember which year, one year he broke his thumb. He got hit with a comebacker and broke his thumb on his pitching hand. And the other year in 76, he went 11-3 with a 3 ERA, but he only started 20 games. And Johnny Bench said in an interview I read today that he was a big game money pitcher. And he always started the first game of, you know, a big series for him. After the 76 series or World Series, he went to the Yankees as a free agent. He was really the first guy. He was in that first big free agent class.
Yep.
76. 78, he hurt his shoulder and he never pitched again. Twice he led the league in winning percentage. His career record with the Reds was 91-44 with a 3.03 ERA and an ERA plus of 114. And from 1990 to 2005, he was in some way a pitching coach in the Reds organization. And the last 13 years was either as the bullpen coach or the pitching coach for the big club. The other thing Johnny Bench stressed in the interview that I read with him today was that he was a very quiet guy. You couldn't get him to talk about himself or anything like that. And Bench just said he cried like a baby when he heard he died yesterday.
Yeah. You know, and rest in peace, Don Gullett, really. A Reds Hall of Famer, as we said. The guy that in my mind, I've kind of always compared Gullett to, and this is going to be a strange comparison when you first hear it, but hear me out. But it's Eric Davis. And here's, you know, Eric Davis, early in his career compared to Willie Mays, all the talent in the world, should have been a Hall of Famer and would have been if it hadn't been for injuries. And so that's where the comparison comes. In 1970, sports writers were comparing Don Gullett to Sandy Koufax.
Right.
I mean, as a kid, being compared to Sandy Koufax and then delivering on it for 19 years.
19 years old.
Yeah, 19 years old. That's a big weight to put on someone's shoulders, but that shows you the type of talent we're talking about. We're talking elite talent, not a guy who, was an ordinary good pitcher. He was elite for a little while.
He really was. And when I heard this yesterday, I sent you a text and I said, isn't he the last Reds teenager?
Last one I can remember.
He's the last one I can remember also.
Yeah. I mean, 1974, Sparky Anderson, talking about Johnny Bench and Don Gullett. It's the only Hall of Fame battery active in baseball today. Barring an injury, here's what Sparky said. Barring an injury, Gullett is almost sure of making the Hall of Fame. With his body and the way he stays in shape, I know he's going to pitch until he's at least 35. So doing that, you know he's going to win at least 250 games with the start he has. The one caveat that Sparky had there, barring injury, ultimately was what the downfall was.
But it was a shoulder and rotator, and you know, now he'd be pitching again, and you know, maybe, you know, 8 months or a year later. And back then, it was just, you know, it was a death knell to your career.
It was, but you know what we hear a lot with Gary Nolan's another young guy around that time who injury, derailed his career. And in my mind, I'd always thought with Gullett that it was overuse like every other pitcher in that day and age. But I don't think that's what it was.
No.
If you look, he didn't throw some crazy amount of innings. He threw 243 innings 1 year. That's the most he ever threw. Only three times in his career, more than 200 innings. I think just like you said, it's the luck of the draw, injuries, but also the time that he played. You know, you're right. If it were today, he would pitch till he's 35, 38.
Yep.
Almost certainly.
Yeah, so. he was a Joe Burrow. The injuries that he's had, they were never repetitive. You know, he broke a thumb on his pitching hand. He got hit with a run. Then he had hepatitis 1 year. You know, and then he had the shoulder problems in 78 with the Yankees. And apparently part of that was he slipped on the mound and hurt his back and his neck to the point where he had to be in a neck brace for a while.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the shoulder had something to do with that or whether that was a separate injury that he had with the Yankees. By that point, I had kind of lost track of him. I was in the Navy and he was in the Yankees and I hated the Yankees. So, but
you love the Yankees now, so it's okay. You forgive Don Gullett.
I forgive Don Gullett. I still don't like the I don't like New York team.
Well, I don't know. Any other thoughts? Just we wanted to pay a little bit of a tribute to really one of the big time talents in the history of this franchise, and a Reds Hall of Famer, and a guy that I think deserved just a couple minutes of memories.
He's another big what if guy like Eric Davis, and you know, and the other names in Cincinnati, Greg Cook, and some other guys, you know, like that. But just they could have been so much more than they were able to be if the situation would have turned out differently for him.
And yet you compared him to Joe Burrow. Don't put that on Joe Burrow, Ricky Bobby.
Well, that's a good point.
Don't you put that on him. Oh, no.
That'd be like you talking about
Stop it. Stop.
All right. We'll just move on. We're just going to move on to the next point on our agenda here.
There we go. Other big news of the week. Perhaps the biggest news of the week for some Reds fans. The Cincinnati Reds avoided arbitration with Jonathan. It's harder to say second baseman Jonathan India. I'm not sure that's true anymore. But they avoided arbitration, agreed on a 2-year deal. 2 years, $3.8 million this year, $5 million in 2025. And with some performance bonuses in his in the second year, that could earn an additional couple million of dollars. So when you saw this, there's a lot to unpack here, really, with Jonathan India. What were your immediate thoughts?
I was glad they didn't go to arbitration, because I don't think it ever helps your relationship with your player if you have to go to arbitration. Even everybody can say, you know, it's just the business side of the blah, blah. But when you go into I don't care who you are, if you go into a room and you're talking bad about the guy sitting across from you, and then when you walk out, you got to work together, there's going to be some bad feelings.
Yeah, no question.
Almost immediately after this came out, the Enquirer was running stories where they're saying Kral was telling India, we really don't want to trade you. We never wanted to trade you. That was all the media, blah, blah, blah. And that may be true. But if it is, I tend to believe that the Reds are overvaluing Jonathan India. Now, I think it's good that they have him, you know, they have some financial stability, some, you know, they know what they're going to be paying him the next couple of years. Do I think they're overpaying him? Yeah, I think they're overpaying him. If he comes out and is terrible this year, they're still stuck paying him $5 million next year. Unless they pay him to, you know, no matter what. So, I don't know. But does that make him – and I've heard other people say this, and I hadn't thought of it, but does it make him easier to trade?
That was my thought.
Yeah.
My first thought was, oh, wow, yeah, this is you know, 2 years. What is that? Avoid the arbitration next year as well. But, you know, if you're looking to trade for Jonathan India at the trade deadline this year and you only get 2 months of Jonathan India versus a year and 2 months of Jonathan India, or even before – the regular season starts 2 full years. I, you know, at a reasonable price, you can look at it your way and say, they're probably overpaying. And maybe you can argue that. You can also squint the other way and say, especially if he gets off to a hot start this year and all of a sudden looks like not necessarily a bargain, but that's really not a lot of money.
No, frankly, it's not.
In this day and age. So I think you get him at a reasonable rate, and maybe that makes it a little easier to cut a deal. And we'll talk a little bit more about the infield later, but my opinion is if the Reds are going to trade him, and I'm not saying they have to trade him. I like having depth. I like having as many good players as possible, and Jonathan India is your fifth best infielder or whatever. That ain't bad.
You know, yeah, I mean, he's approximately worse. Average. You know, he's basically an average hitter and a little bit below, you know, average defensively. I don't think he's going to be a big guy that's going to help him a whole lot in the outfield, but I think he's going to get at bats out there.
Well, I just think that it might behoove the Reds to trade him sooner rather than later. Because what if he doesn't get to play a lot early on, or he starts slow? His given that two of his three seasons have been subpar, then you start to really wonder whether his value is cratered. And at that point, maybe your best option is just to keep him, because at that price, maybe you're not going to be able to deal him. So, but Jonathan India, it surprised me a little.
Well, this is a new thing for the Reds. Generally, you know, if they got to the point where they exchanged numbers, it went to arbitration, from my memory anyway. So the fact that they're, you know, able to do a deal late and avoid it, maybe that's a change in the view of the front office. I don't know. Well, the time will tell.
Hard to say. All right. So, Bill, it's that time of year. The one episode of this show every year when we get to officially announce pitchers and catchers have reported to spring training. I'll circle back to where I let off this show. How, as a Reds fan, how does your excitement, your anticipation for this season compare to previous seasons?
Oh, it's higher than it's been in quite a while. And the other thing I think is pretty cool is they said almost everybody is there already. And I think that bodes well. I mean, if everybody's excited about getting started and Nate and I talked a little bit about this last week. I love that that Pecota and these other systems are picking the Reds to win, you know, 70 some games, 73 games, 75 games. I love that because if I'm a player, that pisses me off. I got that big chip on my shoulder coming into the season. I'm going to be playing hard. I'm going to take your prediction and show you where you can put it. And I think that shows with, you know, with all these guys that are already in camp, you know, they're not showing up, you know, when, you know, Saturday when they're expected or whenever they're ready to go to work.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned Pecota. That's the Baseball Prospectus, Pecota system. It's their prognostication system, their projections. And it said the Reds were going to win 78. We'll go ahead and talk about something we had later on that we're going to discuss. Let's go ahead and talk about it now. Frankie Montas. Now, if you haven't heard of Frankie Montas, he plays for the Reds now. He's a pitcher, right-handed pitcher. And so he was asked about, what do you think about the computers saying we're going to win 78? He goes, come on, that's low. Give us some credit. Jeez, I'm going to win 20 myself.
There you go.
I love it.
I do too. I love it. And they were off 23 games on the Reds last year. So if they're off 23 games on this year, we're up around 90 wins.
There you go, right? Well, and that's actually the point here, which is that I know that, especially this time of year, we're always too optimistic about the Reds, or we're squinting to try to find the silver lining. But, and you want to argue against these computer projections. But I think with this year's team, you can point to a singular reason why maybe they don't quite capture what the Reds have. The Reds have so many young kids. How do you make sense of that? And how do you, and these projection systems historically have had difficulty. They like as much data as possible. So guys later on in their career, they have a little more data to toss into into the spreadsheet. So
yeah, Nate made that point last week that these systems are based off of past performance, and there's just not enough past performance to judge that. And if you can't be excited about this team and if you can't see the upside of this team, I think you're not looking. Their 78 wins, I think, is the floor.
The floor?
Yeah.
You know, I think that's, I don't know, you know, the Reds will always break your heart. That's what we've seen over the last, 30 years.
You're going to see, but
forget the last three decades. This is going to be the year where they're going
to. Good vibes only, man. Good vibes only.
If we can't have good vibes only this year, I agree with you. Then what are we even doing here? So my expectation, frankly, is we're talking 85, 86 wins. That's probably my prediction. And we'll have a prediction show later this spring. But 85, 86 wins gets you in the playoff race and potentially
we'll
in the
be
playoff.
Right there at the end. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I'll take that. And if everything goes right, and don't we deserve a season where everything goes right? If everything goes right.
It hasn't happened since 1990.
That's a fact. Although you could say last year, a lot of things went right.
Well, you know, and last year we said, if we were still playing meaningful baseball at the end of September, that's a good year. And that's what we got. We played meaningful baseball till the end. And, you know, with a team that a lot of people expected, and I did, I expected them to lose 100 games last year or close. You can't, and if that team didn't get you excited, you don't like baseball.
Yeah. Well, you know, last year's team, if, and this is a big if, and we don't know that it's going to happen this year, everybody's rosy projections center around, oh, well, if the pitchers are healthy this year, and we don't know if they're going to be healthy. They're not usually. But last year, it cratered at the end, the pitching did, because of the injuries. But if there's just reasonable health, there's more depth this year among the starters. And so if you just have a reasonable number of injuries, all of a sudden, yeah, it does look a lot better. You know, and you don't have to be much better than what they were last year. This is what I'm going to keep harping on probably the first 3 months of the season. They don't have to be that much better than they were last year.
Right.
And there are real reasons to believe that they could be better. The depth in the pitching, I still have concerns. I think they should have got another starter. I think they should have got another reliever or two. I think they should have got an outfielder. But if the pitcher's reasonably healthy, if the kids take a reasonable step forward, I'm not asking for Elly De La Cruz to become Juan Soto or whoever.
Some of the young guys are going to regress a little bit. But if the majority of them can take a step forward, it doesn't have to be a leap forward. If they can take a step forward and be more consistent, play a little better. And like you said about the pitching, even if we have injuries, I think the overall depth on the of possible starters and guys that even pitched last year, that they're going to start in the minor leagues, that got experience last year, and that's going to help them. So that gives us depth too. You know, the Connor Phillips, the Trevor, the Williamsons, these guys are going to be in a position where they're going to be more equipped to help this team this year than they were last year.
Speaking of injuries, I guess we should go ahead and mention a couple early on that are worth discussing. Alex Young, lefty reliever, who had a pretty good season last year. Already been scratched from his spring throwing schedule. Back tightness.
I hate that.
I hate it.
I hate back problems. Back problems just
the worst. Yeah. Well, fortunately, the Reds have Brent Suter as a lefty out of the bullpen, because last year Young was it for most of the season. I think my hope is that Brandon Williamson is in the bullpen as well. And then, of course,
You think they'll have three guys in the bullpen?
Well, I don't know. Sam Moll. Sam Moll's back.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He'd be the third with Williamson.
Yeah.
So. I think Williamson's going to be in Louisville starting.
Well, that's a good question, and that's going to depend on health.
Absolutely. He's another guy that if we have problems in the rotation, if he's down there still stretched out in Louisville, he pitched better than I think any of us expected last year.
Oh, goodness. I will admit it. I was first in line to say that I was worried given his early season starts in AAA and his early season starts in Cincinnati.
Yeah, but he came better
every outing. Yeah. But he's the seventh or eighth starter, maybe. Sixth or seventh, probably, I guess.
Last year, he was getting the ball every fourth day.
Yeah.
Every fifth day, you know.
So, I think you may be right. Again, it depends on who's available. But if he's down to start in Louisville every 5 days, and then as soon – because pitchers are going to get hurt. As soon as the Reds need him, have him up. That's not bad. Other injury news to note. Well, one injury on the exciting side, Nick Lodolo is healthy. And, you know, he's barely been healthy in his big league career.
He's on a normal throwing schedule, I believe, right now.
He is. And so, you know, I shouldn't have mentioned anything because I know I get accused of injury.
You're the bad luck. You're the bad juju, dude.
Yeah. The other injury news, I guess, is Jonathan India. Jonathan India is still dealing with some plantar fasciitis. Now, that hurts.
Yes, it does. And it's a concern to me that this is something that put him on the DL for a while last year, and he was even struggling through it, it sounds like, at the end of last year, and he's still struggling with it in spring training. It sounds like a chronic foot problem to me, you know, if it's been hanging on for that long. And I don't know whether surgery can fix that, and if it could, why they didn't do it over the winter, or whether this is something that's just, chronic.
Yeah, it's interesting. Now, have you seen any quotes from India this year? Because if you remember the quotes from last spring where he very, very loudly said, I'm taking this team on my back. You know, I'm the leader of this team. And he got mocked for that in some quarters. I thought it was good. I thought it was fine. I like it. And frankly, I think that attitude of we're better than everybody thinks and follow my lead played a role in the Reds having a better season than everyone expected. But have you seen any quotes from him? Yeah, I haven't seen any quotes yet. He's been notoriously quiet.
I mean, they've only been in camp for 2 days, so.
Yeah, but he doesn't need more than a couple of hours to start talking in the past. So, interesting. So what else? What else have we seen? I guess the one thing that I think is pretty interesting is the Reds' plan. Supposedly, according to manager David Bell, you're a big David Bell fan, aren't you?
And we were talking about this last week, again, last week, and I quoted you, you know, that I think there are, you know, five great managers and five terrible managers and the rest are in the middle, and he's in the middle somewhere.
Somewhere, yeah.
I don't know whether he's at the top of the middle or the bottom of the middle. There are times he drives me crazy, and times I go, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the definition of average, I think. So he essentially announced that the regulars at shortstop and second base this year are going to be exactly – this is why I think David Bell's a genius, because he said exactly what I wanted him to say. next week when he says something I don't want him to say, I'll change my mind. But Ellie De La Cruz at shortstop, Matt McClain at second base. And he said that just about simultaneously with Jonathan India signing that two-year deal. I don't know. It's the right move. It's clearly the right move. I don't think – unless you're Jonathan India's mom
Or one of these reporters that's been saying that Ellie could start the season in AAA.
Well, I'm going to choose to remain silent about some writers who say some silly things. But back to the point. I presume. I mean, I like arguing with you, but I think this might be a point where we're on the same page. That's the right call. Clearly,
I think it absolutely is right now. I don't know. I don't know if Ellie De La Cruz is a career shortstop. I could see him ending up in the outfield. I could see him as a center fielder down the road. Maybe he ends up being a great defensive shortstop. But, you know, they've got a guy that's probably going to start the year where Chattanooga, that they say is maybe the best defensive shortstop in the system. And they think he's going to be a hitter too. So he's going to be here before long. And, you know, we're going to have to either make a trade or find a way to play all these good players. So.
That's right. So the other interesting news from David Bell was that he said essentially everywhere else on the infield up for what were his words? Everything else, we've got to let it play out. And so it'll be interesting to see how it does, if everyone is healthy, how does the rest of it play out? You know, is Encarnacion Strange your first baseman? Is Noivy Marte your third baseman? Is Noivy Marte your right fielder? Where's Spencer Steer? Is he your third baseman? Is he your left fielder? Where does Jonathan India shake out in all this? I think it's going to be pretty interesting to see where those chips fall. And I could argue six different ways about the way I think it should go. Any thoughts?
Two things. Once you and this just occurred to me when you asked me if I'd read where India said anything. When they were talking to him about his contract and you know him saying that he's willing to play wherever they want him to play, he said he just wants to play every day. Well, he's not going to play every day. He may play 3 days a week, 4 days, maybe. I don't know. The other thing I thought was interesting, and the Enquirer ran some video of this of CES. Working out at third base yesterday under the tutelage of number 11, Barry Larkin. Now, if you're going to get coached down on the left side of the infield, that's a pretty good guy to have working with you. So, you know, I don't know if it means anything that he's going to play some third base. How much, who knows? But I like to see him working on his defense.
Yeah. Well, and the guy I didn't mention a moment ago for some reason, Jamer Candelario. Mm-hmm. You know, first base, third base, going to be in there somewhere. I think you're going to have a bunch of guys that can rotate. And, you know, if you have like 11 guys, you can get them all plate appearances. Mm-hmm. You can rotate enough to get them all, but you're going to have some guys in the lineup pretty much every day. I think De La Cruz and McClain are that way. And to echo something you just said a moment ago, I don't know. I think it's absolutely the right decision to have Ellie De La Cruz starting at shortstop every game this season. But is he going to be your shortstop next year, the year after? I don't know that, but that's why this year, let's find out. Let's find out if he's going to be that guy.
You know, he's going to be the shortstop 4 or 5 days a week. You know, and McClain will probably get a start there and maybe two. I don't know. You know, and they may DH, depending on how he's playing. De La Cruz may DH. I mean, who knows? The four guys that I think will get the majority of the playing time in the infield, I think, are Candelaria, Ellie, McClain. And I would guess Marte right now. And I think CES is a guy that may get the short end of the stick here a little bit. I really like him. I really think he can rip.
Well, he may be the DH. I mean, he may just be your primary DH.
He could be.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to think Steer's probably left field. It's so crowded in the infield.
They still need a right-handed hitting outfielder.
And I still don't understand why they – well, I know why they didn't. I'm not going to say it, though, because it's good vibes only here.
Well, I texted you this the other day. I still think they ought to go after Duvall. I would think his price is dropping.
Robert Duvall?
Yeah, Robert Duvall.
Classically trained actor, Robert Duvall.
The greatest living American actor, in my opinion. I agree.
Resident of Charlottesville, Virginia.
I didn't know that.
He is. It's true. So Adam Duvall, I think, actually, is who you're talking about.
Yes. Bring him back. I think he could really help this team. I really do.
I can't believe I'm saying it, but because when Duvall was here, he was so limited. He mashed against against lefty, certainly, but he had lots of home runs. Otherwise, he was not great other than hitting the ball really hard and occasionally getting over the fence. And he played pretty good defense in left field. And frankly, I haven't watched him enough in the last couple of years to know whether he can still play defense. But I will say that he has sort of maximized his value as a major league player. And he's still a legitimate big league hitter at this point. And I agree. I mean, especially if you're talking about a guy they're going to rotate in and out, platoon in the outfield. I think he makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. And I would love to see the return, the triumphant return.
The triumphant return of
Adam Dunn. Duvall, sorry.
Well, him too.
Him too. Bring him back. Bring him back. All right. So, Bill, before we get into viewer mail here in a moment, a couple other things we want to mention quickly. 25 years ago today. Tell me what happened 25 years ago today.
Well, Greg Vaughn came to town and had a talk with Marge and said, if you want me, I'm keeping the facial hair. And the Reds' ban on facial hair went away 25 years ago today.
The kids won't remember this.
But no, they won't.
Ever, the Reds banned facial hair. And long hair. That's right. Jake Fraley never could have played for this team. Jonathan India never could have played for this team. Greg Vaughn. And you know what? I'm glad they changed the rule, made a special exception for Greg Vaughn, because in 1999, Greg Vaughn took his team on his back and almost got him to the playoffs. So.
Well, you even talked about the no facial hair and no long hair in your column this week.
Did I?
Just that you mentioned it, you know, the contrast versus the A's and the – you didn't mention my favorite all-time Red in your column that day.
I did or didn't?
You did not.
Bobby Tolan?
Yeah, my favorite. He's my favorite.
Yeah, that was a little sarcasm there, Bill.
I'm holding up my invisible sarcasm sign.
Thanks for the free publicity, by the way. ChadDotson.com.
Good column this week. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I appreciate that. It was about the most underrated Reds team of all time. Maybe the best Reds team not to win at all, the 1972 Reds.
Vastly underrated World Series. Vastly. Oh, incredible. Really, really. Johnny Bench probably doesn't like the memory of it because of Raleigh Fingers making him look like an idiot.
Yeah.
But
that was
in your column. Six of the seven games were one-run games, and the only one that wasn't one-run game was one game that later Joe Morgan said that's the only day we were the big Red machine.
Right.
I think they won 8-1 or something in Game 6. I think it was.
Back to the facial hair. It was the hairs versus the squares, because the A's, for those of you that are young, they were mustaches and long
Finley
hair.
Finley paid them to grow mustaches
and then it became a thing, and the Reds were notoriously black cleats and
short hair,
and it was a different time. But this ChadDotson.com, this newsletter, is It is free. And something else you would have seen this week is a little bit of a discussion about Joseph Daniel Votto. Now, this is a guy that used to play for the Reds as recently as 2023. Bill, did you see his post on the Instagrams this week?
I saw it. Yeah. Yes, I did.
Yeah. Well, I didn't see it on Instagram, but I did see it on
Twitter. I saw it on Twitter.
Somebody posted it, but it was a picture of Joey Votto in a batting cage. Long black beard. His beard has grown out. And he the caption on the picture is a poem from Dylan Thomas that many of you have read, even if you didn't know it was a Dylan Thomas poem. But do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. And I tell you, I don't think I've been sadder in a long time than it just the sound of, and I don't know, maybe just meant that, look, I'm playing as hard as I can to finish out as hard as I can, but it sounded like it's a guy that's, the end is nigh, and he's not, pitchers and catchers are reported, he has not signed a contract with anyone.
Seems kind of resigned to his fate.
He does, and it just, it makes me sad. Why don't the Reds just sign him?
Where would he play? Seriously, even if they got him cheap and they had a roster spot for him, and I'm not convinced that they do. I mean, he can only play first base and DH.
It's a good question. Okay, I'll say that. It's a good question. I put more stock into some more the more sentimental aspects.
I know you do.
Of the game, and just for him to come back, 1 year deal, and this is the Joey Votto retirement tour. And it, I mean, if someone else is going to give him a contract to play consistently, he should take it. If that's not going to happen, though, let him be the 25th guy on the roster. Let him DH, you know, a couple days a week.
And you don't see any possibility of that being a conflict with trying to make the playoffs or
no.
Or detracting from the emphasis on winning every day?
No.
Okay.
I don't, because okay. I have faith in Joey Votto, and Joey Votto last year, despite the injuries, was a league average hitter. And with pop, 14 homers in 65 games. So no, if you were going to let him DH against mostly right-handed pitchers, well, only right-handed pitchers, not every right-handed pitcher, but if you let him DH against only right-handed pitchers, he'll be an above-average hitter. Maybe you're just playing him 3 or 4 days a week, but I truly believe that. But it's got to be Joey Votto raging against the dying light and agreeing that it's time for him to take a step back. And I don't know that he wants to do that. And I wish it were the Reds. I wish someone would give him a chance to be the full-time DH somewhere. On a good team, I thought that might happen.
How would that affect your? I mean, I know you want to see him go out under his own terms. That's what it sounds like you're saying to me. How would that versus how much it would hurt to see him playing in another uniform?
It would hurt, but that's for me. That's selfishly.
I think that's most people that are Cincinnati Reds Joey Votto fans. It would hurt to. It hurt to see Pete Rose in another uniform. I hope that, you know, that's the one that rung the most with me because Pete played here, you know, his whole beginning of his career. But even, you know, guys, when Perez went somewhere, it was just weird. And Morgan went somewhere else. It was weird seeing him in another uniform, especially then because it was so new, you know.
Yeah. All right. I don't know. I refuse to believe that Joey Votto, if you couldn't play him 4 days a week at DH first base, against only right-handed pitchers, and he wouldn't be a productive hitter. I don't buy it. I still believe that there have been a time when he wasn't a productive hitter. And
do you think he would be more productive than one of the young guys that he'd be taking bats away from?
I don't care.
Well, see, there you go, though. If you think he – I mean, so you're not dismissing the fact that he might be.
He might be. He might not be. But I know Joey Votto's done it before.
Yeah.
Christian Encarnacion Strand. I mean, I think he's going to do it, and if so, he can do it next year. That's the way I look at it. Let's give Joey Votto
playoffs this year.
But I don't. I don't buy the premise that Joey Votto is by definition going to make them worse.
But you're always saying you always are saying we need to put our best 26 guys out there.
I think he'd be the best 26 if you use him correctly. He's Joey Votto. What you're saying is not unreasonable. I'm just, you know what's happening here? I'm not going gentle into that good night. I'm raging against the dying of the light, like Joey Votto suggested. So I don't know. I don't want to see what I would hate is a Willie Mays thing where Willie Mays goes to the Mets and just frankly embarrassed himself. He just, tripping in the outfield, and it really didn't end well. Just to see him in another uniform and going like that, I would love to see him get in a place where he can really get the opportunity to mash, whether that's just 4 or 5 days a week against right-handed pitchers. Because I do truly 100% believe that if you hit him just against right-handed pitchers, that he can be an above-average hitter in the big leagues. Can he play first base? I don't know that. At this point, I don't ever doubt Joey Votto, but I'd hate for it to be a situation where he just it ends because no one wants him.
Yeah, and that's what it looks like right now.
And you know, maybe if that happens, if it gets to that point, I would hope the Reds would be. And I don't have any belief that the Reds would be classy like this, but it'd be a perfect situation to sign the guy to a 1-day contract.
Absolutely.
Have a ceremony.
If they don't, they ought to be ashamed of themselves.
Retire his number.
Right away.
Well, maybe not right away, but eventually. I think 19 needs to be retired.
I think he's a number retire guy.
Yeah. And then his full career with the Reds, and hopefully in the Hall of Fame. So, Joey.
And in 4 years or whatever the number is, an absolute unanimous first ballot Reds Hall of Famer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, without question. Without question. He better be.
Yeah.
But I hope Reggie Sanders gets in before him. So you want to answer some viewer mail questions, Bill?
Okay.
Let's answer some viewer mail questions. These questions, as always, are actual letters from actual viewers. If they weren't, could I do this?
Well, you actually got a letter.
I got a letter this week. Bill, we got a letter this week.
Mail.
These letters come from our friends at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy, patreon.com/riverfrontcincy, where you too can support the world's most dangerous podcast. Our first letter this week comes from Thomas Dennis. Thomas, thank you. If you're watching on YouTube, you see that Thomas sent us an actual letter. It's on the screen. Dear Chad and the Podfather, Pearl Jam released its Dark Matter tour dates. Some were shocked to see that next to places like London, Lisbon, that's Portugal, Bill, and New York.
Thank you.
Was Missoula, Montana. Of course, Tom is from Montana. So first, thoughts on Pearl Jam. That's the first question. Bill, do you have any thoughts on Pearl Jam?
How do you make jam out of pearls? Does it taste funny?
I'm not even going to respond to that. My thoughts on Pearl Jam are in, I think, 1997 or 1998, I was driving my burgundy Chevy Cavalier around Washington, D.C. And this was the time when stereos in cars, the kids listening won't know what we're talking about, but this is showing my age a little bit. But you had like a front plate on your stereo in your car. And then when you left your car, you pulled that front plate off and took it with you. That way nobody would steal your radio. Mm-hmm. Sounds ridiculous now. But
you steal the car.
Well.
in D.C.
Carjacking has gone through the roof in D.C. That's true. I had to run to a friend's place in the Georgetown neighborhood. And I was going to be in there for a few minutes. So I didn't take it out. And so I got back out. My window had been smashed. My stereo had been pulled out of my Chevy Cavalier. You know, this was like a Christmas gift, the stereo. I was so happy with it. But even worse, inside it was my Pearl Jam CD from the 10 album. And I still shed a tear about once a month for my Pearl Jam CD. All right, so the next question from our friend Thomas Dennis. Who will shock Reds fans in 2024? Who will shock Reds fans? Bill, I don't know if you have an answer. Here's what I'm going to say. And this is, maybe this is not quite what the question means, but I'm seeing, and we're going to have a question here later about Hunter. I think it's going to be Hunter Green. I think this is the year that Hunter Green becomes an ace. And he's clearly going to remain healthy because there's no bad vibes being sent his way by anyone. That's what I think will shock Reds fans the most. Do you have a single player that that will shock the Reds fans?
I think Montas may be a surprise. If he's healthy, he's got all the tools. And he's going to win 20. He said so.
He said so. Yeah, if Montas could be healthy and productive and Nick Martinez could be a starter, could pitch well to be a starter, that changes a lot of things about what I think about this team. So, yeah, if Montas surprises, sign me up.
You think Martinez is going to be in the rotation?
No, I don't. But if they're going to give him a shot to be there, and if he pitches well enough to be there, as opposed to him being there because of 15 injuries, that's a different story. But I'm just saying, if that were to happen, if he's your number five starter, all of a sudden things look a little interesting. Although I think I might rather have him in the bullpen either way. Thomas, thanks for the actual letter.
Sincerely,
yes,
Tom from Montana.
That's right. An actual letter sent to the home office in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Next question comes from Joey Gaditza. Joey from the land up north. Hello, Chad and Bill. Who do you think gets the ball on opening day? Hunter, I assume. They haven't announced it, but I don't see how it's not Hunter. He was the opening day pitcher last year.
Assuming he's healthy, it's a no-brainer.
If he's healthy, is there any chance anyone else gets the ball on opening day?
No.
I don't think so. So, Hunter Green. Next, from Skyler Webker. Skyler's question is this. What does Ellie De La Cruz have to do to get a Bobby Witt Jr.-like extension from the Reds? For context, Witt got the extension after his sophomore year. Bobby Witt Jr., the shortstop for the Kansas City Royals, 14-year kind of mega deal, 11 guaranteed seasons. 11 guaranteed season team option that could be 3 more years. It could be a 40-year deal. So the first thing I would say is, well, the Reds, and by the way, the terms weren't announced in the deal, but sources say $288 to $377 million, depending on it, 11 or 14 seasons. And there are some player opt-outs as well in there, but we don't need to get into Bobby Witt Jr.'s. Ordinarily, I would say, come on, the Reds just don't do stuff like that. Now, they did it with Joey Votto, but Joey Votto was already an MVP when they did it. And frankly, it worked out very well with Joey Votto. If the Reds were taking lessons, if you're looking at who gave value for it, Joey Votto, frankly, was a little bit underpaid over the course of his contract, a little bit. So I already say the Reds aren't going to do that. The Reds are cheap, obviously, but who's the team that gave Witt the contract? The Kansas City Royals. Really interesting to me. I think there's zero chance, and there's one reason I think there's zero chance. But I think if I were the Reds, I'd be going all out. If they could sign him to the exact same contract. Now, granted, Bobby Witt was, a sophomore, as Skyler noted, and also had more of a demonstrated performance, I guess, on the big league level. He struggled a little early on in his career, but more so than what we've seen from Ellie. So I would say the chances are zero, but if he would sign that deal tomorrow, I'd give it to him. I don't know what you think, Bill.
I wouldn't go that many years, and the Reds won't. If I could sign him to a year, a contract the length of what they gave Green, that I think that's a more reasonable thing. But to answer Skyler's point, the first thing Ellie's got to do is be better. Like you said, Witt's played 2 years in the big leagues. Both years he's been above average. Ellie was below average last year. Exciting, fun to watch, absolutely. But he's just got to be—he's got to be a better player. And Witt's a year older too. We'll see.
Here's what I'm saying to that though. He's got to be better. If we wait for him to be better, then 1 year from now, the contract you can sign him to is it's a different. You can't sign him to the same thing you could sign him to today. presumably. We are completely discounting the fact that Ellie De La Cruz's agent is Scott Boras, and that plays a huge role in this discussion. So, but just, you know, apples to apples. I sign him now. I think that many teams are finding this is my value. This is where you get your value, is by signing these kids to longer deals. The players want it because they get some guarantees. If Ellie De La Cruz gets hurt, he still gets paid. But if he becomes what everyone believes he can become, and it depends on what the Reds think he can become, then he's underpaid. So I don't know. There's a little risk to it, but I think it's a risk worth taking.
But we both agree that they aren't going to. They won't do it.
No, they won't do it.
I think if he has a let's say an ERA plus of 100 to 110 this year. I mean, not an ERA plus, you know what I mean? OPS plus. I could see the Reds, trying to sign him next year in the offseason to a 5-6-7 year deal.
I'd go as long as he'd sign. And if he has an ERA plus of 110, double it. Whatever you're going to offer it, double it.
All right.
He's Shohei. All right, next good question, Skyler. Next question from Hooper Powell. Hooper, in your opinion, who are the top three non-roster invitees that you feel have a chance to come north with the team? I'll begin here, Bill. I think there's one by far and away has the best chance to come north with the team, and that's Josh Harrison. Reds killer, who is a non-roster invitee. I think he's got a – if I had to lay money on any non-roster invitee making it, it's clearly him to me, and I think he's going to make it anyway. I think he's going to be the 26th man on the roster.
He lives about 5 minutes over that way.
That way?
Yeah, that way.
Towards me?
He's a neighbor of a friend of mine.
Yeah. Well, I
you can throw a rock from her house to his house.
Please do not do that.
I won't do that. I agree with you. Nate and I we talked about this quite a bit last week. I don't know whether I hope he makes the team or not. I'd rather see him go out and get Duvall. And him push somebody else down into that 26 spot. But it sounds like it's going to come down to Harrison or Barrero. And for the 26 spot, I think I'd rather have Barrero. He's more versatile and he's got a higher ceiling. But that's assuming he comes into spring training and shows something. I could not come up with three guys that have a chance of making this team. The other guy that jumped out at me is Blake Dunn.
Wait, power.
Power, speed.
And he's a right-handed hitting outfielder.
And he's a right-handed hitting outfielder. And he's not a kid. I mean, he's 24.
Yeah.
You know, but he hasn't played above double A, but he hasn't been healthy. So I think, you know, he's one – he could be a spring training surprise. He could be like CES last year. And he might not, you know, fight his way onto the team coming out of Arizona. But if he goes to Louisville and starts tearing it up, and they're still struggling for a right-handed hitting outfielder, they might have one in-house.
Well, but at his age, you're right. He might be able to impress enough in spring training to come east with the club. I do want to quibble with something you said there. I'm not sure I agree that Jose Barrero has a higher ceiling than Josh Hamilton.
Theoretically.
Josh Harrison. Certainly not a higher ceiling than Josh Hamilton. Or maybe higher ceiling. Josh Hamilton of 2024, yeah. The other guy maybe I would say I think might have a shot is Tony Santillan.
I thought of him when I was looking at the non-roster guys, but he just struggles so much. Well, it's, of course, so is Dunn, but I don't know.
The Reds are going to need relievers.
I could see him being a useful arm in the bullpen.
The Reds are going to need relievers. That's why I think he has a shot, because he at least has a little bit of a pedigree, although it's been a while at this point. All right, next question comes from Rich Thompson.
Hi, Rich.
Rich Thompson. By the way, I got to say something about Rich Thompson. Do you mind if I say something about Rich Thompson?
I think you should.
Rich Thompson, let me just say this. I'm not going to go too deep into it, but Rich did something very kind for me this week. And I just want to thank him publicly on the show. I won't get into it too much here, but Rich is a genuinely good guy. His questions are too long every week. He has trouble keeping it short, but we put up with it because that dude is a genuinely good guy. So, Rich, thank you. Thank you from me here at Red League Nation World. Oh, not Red League Nation. The Riverfront World Headquarters. Guys, this 2006 again or something, Bill?
We've rebranded, Chad. We've rebranded.
They rebranded us out, I think. Rich's question. Gentlemen, I've recently read that Ellie De La Cruz has worked hard this offseason in shortening his swing and his conditioning. I mentioned Juan Soto earlier in the show. De La Cruz has been hitting with Juan Soto this offseason. Hopefully these efforts will translate into fewer strikeouts and enable him to have better endurance for a full season and potential postseason. I like the way you think. However, if he gets off to a slow start, and Bill, this is we're going exactly where we were alluding to earlier, and start striking out a lot, do you foresee the Reds letting him try to work things out at the MLB level, or will they send him back to AAA? My short answer is things would have to get really, 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 really bad for them to send him to AAA. I don't see it happening.
He'd have to be completely lost. The other thing, and everybody talks about, you know, how his swing changes. I saw a clip of Chris Welsh yesterday or the day before. And he was saying Ellie is also bulked up. So he's gotten bigger and stronger. And I also read where he said he's worked on his legs so he doesn't run out of gas later in the season.
I saw a picture. It looks substantially bigger.
Yeah. And I've read where they said that, you know, one of the things they think happened last year with these guys that hadn't been in the big leagues is they were used to playing, getting Mondays off every week in the minor leagues. And you don't get a day off every week in the big leagues. So they, you know, they're conditioning to get him over the, you know, over the hump through the course of the season. Ellie's bulked up, but to answer Rich's question here, I think he'd have to be completely lost in spring training. I mean, just look horrific for them to end up in AAA. Now, you and I disagree with some of the local writers who seem to think that there is or was a chance that he would start the year in Louisville. But I would be curious to see if they still say that after what Bell said this week with saying that he was going to be the regular shortstop.
And I'm not going to call out any writer that said there's a chance he'll start AAA because there's zero chance he'll start AAA. But to Rich's question, you know, if he got off to a really slow start, I don't know. We saw him last year and he slumped badly for a long time. But even then, it was not a situation where I was like, this guy needs to go down. No, I mean, we know what he can do.
There's nothing for him to prove at AAA.
He's got to learn to hit big league pitchers.
Yeah. You don't learn to hit big league pitching in Louisville.
That's a fact. Next question comes from Jordan Salisbury. Jordan Salisbury asks this, hello, gentlemen, not baseball related at all, but have either of you seen Saltburn yet? That's a movie, Saltburn. If so, what are your thoughts? Bill, have you seen Saltburn?
I think it's a series.
It is not. It's a movie.
Is it a movie? Okay. I have not. I heard about it. Somebody told me about it. I have not watched it. I do have a question. Rich and Jordan have both called us gentlemen.
Yeah.
They don't know us.
Yeah, you don't have to lie to be our friends. Saltburn is not a series. I think you were thinking of Falcon Crest.
Oh, that's what it is.
Yeah. Saltburn's a movie. Dallas. No, it's a movie. And here's the thing, Jordan, you just outed yourself as not being a regular reader of my newsletter because I did write about it a couple weeks ago. So yes, I did see it. And I gave it 4.5 out of 5 stars. It was mesmerizing. It was disgusting. It was hilarious. It was nauseating. It was every emotion just about you can think of. And I recommend it highly. It was complete insanity.
And I will give an editorial now that Chad is always wrong on movies. So whatever he says, do the opposite.
You're dead to me. You're dead to me, Bill.
Lackey. I've heard that so many times from you for the last 30 some years. That just we should do this year and out this one now.
We should do a super cut of the number of times that I said that to you on the show over the years. No, I'll say this about Saltburn, to answer Jordan's question. It is, It's not for the faint of heart, and it's not for everyone, but I enjoyed it. So
did you watch Ozark?
No, that's the Silver Spoons kid.
Jason Bateman and Laura Linney. We just finished it the other day, and don't.
Really? I've heard it was good.
The girl that plays Ruth is fabulous. Plays the little Ozark girl but there's no point in it. Anyway.
Well, I don't think you had to worry about me watching that. So, but that's a public service announcement.
There you go.
Next question comes from Cincinnati Reds Fan Podcast, who I know your name and I forgot it. I'm so sorry, but that's your name on our Patreon page. Good evening, fellas. He doesn't call us a gentleman. He calls us fellas.
That's close. That one's right.
All right. Hunter Green is on the hot seat, he says. What do you guys think it takes for Green to take the next step? What if he doesn't? Do we consider him a bust if he continues to be the same guy in 2024? He's okay, but not great. I want to see great. Most of that question, I think, is a great question, and it's a great point of discussion. I think I may quibble with the framing that he's on the hot seat.
Yeah.
I don't think he's on the hot seat. I mean, he's going to be 24 years old this year. In August, right. And he is
world-class stuff.
And he's had injuries, sure, but he's been roughly a league average pitcher for his first two seasons. So, and you see those days where he does things that no one else can do. So, and he has days where not so great, but I don't know what you mean by hot seat, I guess is the way I would start this conversation. Cause I don't see that. Now, do we consider him a bust if he is the same guy? I don't, cause he's still a fairly effective pitcher, but I can see how you'd make the argument that he's a bust given all the expectations and the Sports Illustrated cover and all that, but I still don't think I'd call him a bust. Bill, thoughts?
I've been disappointed in his first year to second year. I didn't see a whole lot of improvement, even though I looked today, is what do they call BABIP last year was 339. That's pretty damn high.
That is, yeah. Unlucky.
So he was pitching in some bad luck. The expectations for him this year, none of the people seem to think he's going to get a whole lot better, and I hope he is. But to answer the question, I agree with you. He's not on the hot seat. He's a 23-year-old kid. But for him to get better, I think he needs to be healthy. And just looking at the number, I think he needs to miss more bats. I think he gives up too many hits. And how he does that, I mean, that you got to be smarter than me about pitching to know that. But, you know, you hear a lot of things about him needing to add a third pitch. I don't know. You know, Mario Soto won a lot of games only throwing two pitches. But it was a different game then.
It was, but the key is what you said. The key is he has to stay on the mound because he's not going to learn how to make that adjustment and to take that next step if he's not on the mound. Right. If he has a fully healthy season this year, I don't know if he's going to be an ace, but I expect you'll see him take a substantial step forward. And I think there's a chance he'll be all-star level if he does that, but it's a big if, and he hasn't demonstrated it yet. So until he does.
Right. And I think this is another one of those things we were talking about earlier with these projections. You know, they base the projections off of past, and so they're basically saying he's going to throw about as many innings this year as he did the last 2 years. If he does that, that's another year that he spends, you know, 2, 3 weeks, 4 weeks on the DL, and he's not going to take that step forward for whatever reason. So, but I hope he makes 30 starts and goes 16-4 and throws an ERA of about 2.5.
Gets two wins in the World Series.
Yeah.
Be good.
Pull Jose Rijo.
Oh, I love it. I'll take that. Sign me up right now.
There you go.
All right. Final question. That's a good question. Final question from Seth Shaner. Seth, hi, Chad. Ooh, only a hi, Chad.
I know. I got snubbed.
You got snubbed by Seth. Ouch. His question, is there one thing that has to happen for this Reds team to be playoff bound? Is there one thing that has to happen for this Reds team to be playoff bound?
There is.
Well, let's hear what you think there is.
They need to win enough games to make the playoffs.
All right, Bill, I guess, you know, by definition, that's the correct answer to this. Win enough games. And that's the correct answer, I guess. What I was going to say was that if there's one thing that has to happen for this Reds team to be playoff bound, it's clearly, as you know, Seth Shaner is a host of one of the shows here on the Riverfront Network, the Red Leg Roundtable. Good episode upcoming with Adam Rosales, one of our favorites.
Yeah, Steve Fizziok on this week.
Good conversation with Steve Fizziok. If you guys don't remember him, look him up. The one thing that has to happen is that on the Red Leg Roundtable show, Seth, you have to get Adam Dunn. If that happens, the Reds will be playoff bound. That's my prediction.
There you go.
All right. Bill, you wanna land this plane here?
And will Dunn call in on the banana phone?
Oh, I hope so. Marty, are you wearing a shirt, Marty? See, and if you don't know what that is, you're missing out. Go search for Adam from Milwaukee. Good grief. Favorite player, Scott Hatterberg, who was on Red Leg Roundtable.
Yes, he
Seth
was.
Shaner. So, all right. So, anyway, Bill, I guess, you know, let's wrap this thing up. I do want to say again, at the Riverfront, we got a bunch of fun things happening at the Bengals show. We got the late night Reds. We got the Red Legs Roundtable. Riverfront U, so much fun stuff. This thing is growing like we didn't expect. So thank you to all of our hosts and for everyone that listens to all those. Thanks to everyone for listening and supporting the Riverfront. Tell your friends, subscribe wherever we are, whatever. Go find us. You know, if you like us, talk about us. If you don't like us, you know, shut up. And then again, patreon.com/riverfrontsensei. Bill, any final thoughts for the crowd out there?
In 2 weeks, I will probably 2 weeks from tonight, I will probably be sitting at a spring training game in West Palm Beach.
The Reds don't play in Florida anymore, Bill.
No, I know.
You're mixed up.
I'm going to go down there. I'm going to keep searching, though. I'm going to go
to Palm, what was it? Plant City.
Actually, where we're staying, I can go 20 minutes north and go to spring training games and 20 minutes south and go to spring training games. I can go day and evening games. There's four teams in that within four, you know, 20 minutes either way. So,
well, send photos, Bill.
We will probably be going to some spring training games in a couple of weeks.
Excellent. Enjoy that. Bill, always fun having you on, my friend.
Appreciate it, my man.
All right. Thanks to all of you for listening. For Bill Lack, for Adam Dunn, shout out to Lisa Alberto, Wayne Conchicki, Eli Cash, and, you know, for Calvin Pickering. This is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.